Good afternoon. You're listening to Gambling with an Edge. Now here are your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today is another mailbag show. Richard and I are addressing questions that you've sent in, and keep them coming to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com, Richard's Twitter account, or just our personal emails. First question, what is your opinion on the double up feature in video poker? There was a time when the double up feature was beatable. I now believe it's an even money feature. Since I'm playing games where I have the advantage, adding a time-consuming feature that slows things down while providing no value is of no interest to me. There are some reasons, though, where it might make sense to use it in some occasions. First, many players aren't playing games where they have the advantage. Adding an even money bet along the way lets them gamble for longer for the same negative EV, or gamble for the same amount of time for less negative EV. There are casinos where the number of hours you play is one of the variables in how much benefits you receive. Doubling up can help you burn up the hours to increase what the same net result can be obtained simply by playing slower without using the double up feature. Periodically, you'll find promotions where hitting a W2G gives you some benefit. In this case, doubling up can be very useful. If you have a choice in stakes, it's most efficient if you can bet so that some pay schedule categories are even multiples of $75. Doubled up, that's $150. Double up three more times, and you reach $1,200 on the nose, which is your goal, assuming the underlying game returns less than 100%. If, say, $5 is the minimum tip you give for W2G, perhaps you should double up $1,250 jackpots twice, yielding $5,000 one and four times and zero the other three. It's the same net EV on the game, but you save $15 in tipping. It causes much bigger swings, but overall the result is the same. All right, next question. I'm in an area where many local casinos let you play multiple hands. To disguise my bet, I had the idea to put down different amounts of money on each hand that averages out to the mathematically correct bet. That is one spot of 10 and one spot of 30 to average a bet of 20. Will this have an effect on my variance? Richard.
Well, of course, right? Because you're betting different amounts, so the variance is going to be a little bit higher. So, you know, this may or may not work. I mean, some places will not be fooled at all by this, and others, maybe it'll buy you a little bit of time, but it's not going to buy you a lot. The fact that you're only betting, you know, $10 and $30 will give you a lot of time, because there are a lot of places that just don't even bother looking at players like that. But those places you're betting in different amounts isn't going to matter to them either. So,
all right. Next question. I play video poker at the Borgata in Atlantic City. I noticed that Borgata's online casino has better pay schedule for the game I play. Am I better off playing online? Also, do you, Bob, play online? And if not, why not? The return on video poker includes the game itself, plus what the casino gives you from the slot club mailers, promotions, etc. A better pay schedule may or may not be a better gamble, depending on these other things. I don't know the benefits at Borgata, either in the brick-and-mortar casino or in their online games. So I can't give you a complete answer, but perhaps now you have a better framework with which to address the question. I've not played video poker online. In Nevada, video poker is not a game that's offered online. If and when video poker is added, I'll look at the benefits from playing online versus playing at the casino and make the decision accordingly.
Yeah, I have played a lot online. I don't currently because, as Bob says, we don't have online gambling here in Nevada. Yeah, I guess the question is the reason that you're playing. If you're just playing for entertainment, you're going to lose less probably if you have to get up and get in your car and go to a brick and mortar casino. If you can just gamble online at home anytime you want and you're not playing a winning game, then you're probably going to lose more money even though you have the same, I mean, a better pay schedule.
All right, next question. Is seeing the dealer's card as a spotter, then relaying to the big player how to play his hand legal? Does it vary from state to state? Richard, I know you've done this before. Has anyone you know ever got caught hole carding? What were the consequences?
Oh, well, many people have been caught hole carding. I mean, that's just part of the business. There was a Nevada Supreme Court case back in the 80s called Einbinder-Dalbin about exactly what you're talking about. They were seeing the hole card, signaling one person to the other, and the Supreme Court in Nevada ruled that that is not a crime. It is not a crime to see the hole card. It is not a crime to relay the information to someone else. I should say it's not cheating. People will call that cheating, but cheating has a legal definition. And so the Supreme Court decided it is not cheating. Now, all of the other states, I've never heard of anyone in any state where they have non-tribal casinos. I've never heard of that being anyone being charged with cheating for that. I have heard of one case in an Indian casino where the Indian casino took them to tribal court and they called it cheating. And lo and behold, the fine for that cheating was the money they had stolen from the player when they first, caught them in the casino. So, yeah, one case where the player's money was stolen by an Indian casino. But, you know, as Bob Nersessian says in his book and on our podcast, if you're in an Indian casino, you know, good luck because they can basically do whatever they want.
Very good. The next question, I needed to paraphrase it. The listener gave me more information than he wanted to share on the air. Hopefully I'm able to share enough to make the question understandable without revealing more than the listener wanted revealed. If I revealed too much, well, I'm sorry, I did my best. So there was a W2G promotion where taxable jackpots each earned an additional bonus. They didn't have enough slot employees that day, so payments were slow. Whenever you hit a jackpot, they gave you a yellow receipt, and then you could play on an adjacent machine if one was available, or maybe even the same machine. While waiting to be paid, this player moved to an adjacent machine. At the end of the day, the player still had a yellow receipt, presumably because he wasn't paid for one jackpot. The casino said that the jackpot was paid and marked in the system that the yellow receipt was missing. The player thinks he was probably not paid, but he's not positive. Overall, the promotion is quite profitable, and he hopes they run it again, but he wonders if he should press this or not. So my opinion is that he should let it go. The casino's records say you've already been paid. You aren't positive that you haven't. Yes, you have the yellow copy, but the casino's records have noted this is being lost. They will thank you for finding it and turning it in, but I don't think you're going to be getting any money out of it. Perhaps you can collect by seeming to be a drunken fool who isn't sure what happened. The casino will want to keep such a player as a customer, so perhaps they'll give you something anyway. But it's more likely that they will see you as a guy taking a shot, which is somebody they don't want around. Do you have any thoughts on this, Richard?
No, Yeah, I mean, I these things are always a judgment call. How good is the promotion? How likely is it might come back? How valuable is the casino to you? How much is the... I'm assuming this is a small jackpot that you're, you know, a $1,200 or something, not a, obviously, a $10,000 or $20,000. So,
yeah, and every case is different. So there's no rule of thumbs that work in all cases. All right, let's move on. I often take my elderly parents on weekend trips to our local casinos. On one occasion, I hit a royal flush, pulled my player's card out, and immediately told my dad, who was sitting next to me, to switch seats and claim the hand pay. No one questioned anything, and they paid the win to my dad, who has been retired forever, is on Social Security, and has not filed taxes for decades because his income is below the minimum standard deduction. Thinking back, doing this might have been quite risky. You think? Okay, could they have looked at the camera and seen that we'd switched places and denied paying the jackpot on the grounds that the Players Club rules were violated? Or is the worst thing that generally happens is they would force me to claim the win? Or do they not care as long as they issue a W2G to somebody? What if I was playing without a player's card? Is it a good AP play to have someone on the team with no tax liability claim smaller hand pays, or is this illegal or unethical at best? In a similar but less questionable situation, I once came across a slot machine that was reasonably close to a must-hit by 5,000 progressive at 4 a.m. in Vegas. I played it for 4 hours until it was extremely close, then called my dad down from the hotel room to finish it off and claim the hand pay. All right. So I'm going to take the last situation first. Simply put, there's nothing wrong with what you did there. When the jackpot was hit, your dad was playing. He should get the W2G, no contest. The problem is that you don't know for sure when it's going to hit. Should you change at $4,993, $4,994, $4,995, $4,996, $4,997, or any other number? If you change too early, he'll get a lot of slot club points that you should be getting, which may not be a problem. I assume he's playing with your money anyway. If you change too late, the situation devolves into the first one you described. In the earlier example, where the jackpot was already hit and then you switch, there are a couple of potential problems. First of all, there's a huge difference between tax avoidance, which is legal, and tax evasion, which is illegal. The move you describe is illegal. You are defrauding the federal and possibly state government. For people who define an AP as legally beating the casino without cheating, this isn't that. This is cut and dried cheating, no ands, ifs, or buts. This is tempered by the fact that you probably won't be caught. Does this matter to you? Do you mind being a cheater who wasn't caught? Is it important to you to be an AP who absolutely never cheats, or do you just want to get the money any way you can? If you define AP as beating the casino where you're unlikely to be caught, well, this might qualify. Now look at the casino's reaction. Most casinos have rules saying you can only play on your own card. Many, though, choose not to enforce those rules. Still others would enforce those rules if they officially notice, but choose to let a situation like what you described go, especially if it's a relative. The less you pay on taxes, the more money you have to gamble. And theoretically, at least, the casino will get a part of that money, at least from their point of view. Note that in most player tracking system, the name of whoever's card was in shows up on the player tracking system. If both you and your father have the same last name, or maybe even the same name, they might not notice. But if your last name is Jones and his is Smith, it'll be obvious to them should they choose to make a deal of it. If you're caught by the casino, which will happen some of the time, some casinos let it go, figuring no harm, no foul, as far as you're concerned. Some casinos will let you make it right by issuing the W-2G in your name while warning you not to do it again. A few casinos will kick both you and your father out for fraud, although those casinos are in the minority. But even if they do kick you out, they will almost certainly pay you first for the current jackpot. All right, next question. I'm new to blackjack and only have some of the playing deviations memorized. I've heard that taking insurance at true count plus 3 and standing on 16 verse 10 at true count 0 plus are two of the larger advantage increase. Are there any reliable information on the ranking of playing deviations? Well, Don Schlesinger's Lustrous 18 is exactly what you're looking for. His book gives you a lot of backup information, but if you Google the Lustrous 18, there's a lot of places where they've summarized it, and you'll get the gist, which is what some players want. So other than the Lustrous 18, Richard, is there another source for this?
Well, I would just say if you want all the information in detail, then pick up Peter Griffin's book, Theory of Blackjack. And in that book, you can see exactly what every strategy deviation is worth. But yeah, the Illustrious 18 covers like 80% of the gain from strategy deviations.
All right. Assuming you come to an area and get backed off at a particular casino, with that casino flyering your picture, what suggestions would you have on continuing playing the area? Please assume this is a very sweaty area like Mississippi, where one back off results in a statewide flyer. What exactly is going on behind the scenes with the flyer? Do they send a picture of me along with my license plate? In theory, if I radically change my appearance and walk to all the other casinos parked from a distance, wouldn't this technically at least buy me some more time at the other casinos in the area? Finally, do you have suggestions on how a tall, nerdy-looking white guy with glasses can appear different enough to fool the other casinos? Thanks a lot for answering this question. All right, Richard.
Well, first of all, I would leave the area. I mean, if you're in a sweaty area and you've just been flyered, go somewhere else. I would stay away. So here's what happens. A flyer goes out to, like you said, in Mississippi, it'll go out to all those casinos. And so your picture is sitting on the top of a stack of pictures of people up in the surveillance room. And, you know, but if you go away for 6 months, and come back with a slightly different look, which I'll talk about in a second. Well, now you're somewhere buried, you know, and each deep in the stack. And so they're unlikely to dig that far down if they're looking into you. And, you know, I'm assuming you're not using a player's card because it would, no matter what you do, it's pointless if you're doing it, using a player's card. But as far as changing your look, you know, get contact lenses or LASIK, grow your hair longer or cut it shorter. You can perm it or dye it, grow facial hair or shave your facial hair. Those are the main things to do to change your look. Change the type of way you dress. Like if you were dressing like an MIT student, you know, jeans and a ratty t-shirt, well, you know, maybe try dressing a little more upscale, like you're a golfer or something, with, you know, nice polo shirts and pants with a belt and that kind of thing. So that's as far as I would go in changing the look. But the main thing is just go to another area.
What about things such as crutches or wheelchairs or maybe a neck brace? Would that...
Yeah, if you, so, those things are going to draw their attention. I mean, a wheelchair I would not recommend just because everything is so slow getting in and out and all of that. Crutches, the same problem. You know, yes, if you use something like a neck brace or, you know, walking with a cane, or you put a big bandage on your forehead, well, any of those things, that's all they're going to see. Oh, it's the guy with the Band-Aid on his forehead, right? So if you combine it, that's much more effective when you're going to a place that you where they have not seen you, and you do something like that so that the next time you come back, you're no longer the guy with the big bandage on his head. But yeah, those kind of things can be effective.
All right. Next question. I remember Anthony Curtis saying he won so many Keno tournaments that he was no longer welcome to play. I'm a little stumped on how to have an advantage on the game. Do people habitually bias their picks, and can a person pick the less frequently chosen numbers? Do some casinos show how many people pick a specific number in the same manner as a tote board in a pari-mutuel racetrack betting and enable players to make informed picks? Can there be an overlay, like this year's Circa Survivor Contest, where a person repeatedly exploits this? Any insights you may have would be awesome. All right, we talked to Anthony about this. And in a recent podcast, that he does a weekly LVA podcast with Andrew Hunt, he addresses the winning Keno tournaments in a recent one. You see a picture of him, what he looked like 30 years ago, where he won tournaments 2 weeks in a row. We'll provide the link in the show notes, and the tournament stuff starts at the 6:15 mark. In his explanation, he goes over basic tournament strategy, including waiting until the end so you know your target number is. Anthony was on a team sponsored by Stanford Wong. I'm pretty sure Blair Rodman was also on that team. This was 30-some years ago. Afterwards, Wong published a tournament strategy book that is still must reading for gaming tournament players. That episode does not address the Circa tournament. Yes, there's an overlay, but you still have to win the tournament against a lot of sharp sports bettors to collect on the overlay. In other podcasts, Anthony and Frank B. have said their strategy is to exploit stale lines. That is, if when the line comes out, the number on the players are betting against has the Cowboys 6-point favorites over the Giants, but on the last day you can put in your picks, the line is slipped to Cowboys being 4-point favorites. This is a week where you would bet on the Giants taking the 6 points using the stale number. Now, a lot of players use related strategies, so it takes more than this to actually win. But at least with the overlay, if you do have a shot at winning, it'll be a bigger prize if you do win. Next question. How much does an additional 1,000 credits add to the expected value of video poker progressives? I'm assuming you're talking about 1,000 credits to a 5-coin royal, where the royal cycle is approximately 40,000 coins. In this case, it adds about 0.5%, assuming you make the appropriate strategy adjustments. For game with a higher royal cycle, maybe the games where flushes return 7-for-1 rather than more typical 5-for-1 or 6-for-1, it can be closer to 0.4%. Next question. You had a podcast about a few players who won $90,000 in cash, and they had to go to the Caribbean to cash this. Why didn't they just have a physical check written out? Richard, do you have thoughts on this?
Well, I don't know why they didn't have a check written out, but there could be many reasons. Sometimes the money isn't all yours and you want to, split it with people. Sometimes you have another game you're going to, so you need the cash. There can be a lot of reasons why you would want the cash instead of a check. So, another problem is, assuming that you need the cash, depositing a $90,000 check in your bank account and then trying to get them to give you cash for it can be a big headache and can get you barred from your bank. So, in that specific case, I don't know why, but that's those are some of the reasons that most people would want cash instead of a check. And by the way, foolish us, we didn't think it was illegal to have cash in the United States, but it does seem to be becoming that way.
And I suppose it's possible that you have the $90,000 in cash and they don't know what your name is. And of course, if you have a check.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. In most cases, you don't want the casino to know your real name. So,
there are currency restriction rules coming into the United States. I think it's $10,000 that you're not supposed to have more than $10,000 in cash coming in, unless you declare.
No. It's fine to bring in as much as you want. You just have to declare it.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, in this particular, if it's the case that I think he's talking about, I mean, there have been more than one, but if it's the case I think he's talking about, they were flying from Puerto Rico, which is part of the United States, which means you do not have to declare the money. So, I mean, yeah, if you are carrying cash and coming from another country, do not try to bring it in without declaring it. And if you're taking more than $10,000 out of the United States, you need to declare it. And they do check people, and people do get their money confiscated for not declaring it.
Very good. Next question. When I started playing video poker, the first time my card was pin locked, other professionals in my network led me to believe it was not a big deal, and it happens all the time. They suggested I go to the Players Club, get the pin reset, and then it's business as usual. Although the pin reset itself usually went off without a hitch, after a few years of playing, I found in almost every case a pin lock card was one of the early indicators that the end was near. Usually within a couple months, I was no mailed or offers were significantly reduced. Regularly scheduled promotions were changed or ended, or the target game was adjusted or removed. In most cases, the subsequent countermeasures ruined the play, and it was time to move on. I'm wondering what your take is, Bob, on having your card pinlocked, either based on your personal experience or on other professionals you know. Is a pinlock usually no big deal, or do most players share my experience where it's more commonly the beginning of the end? Now, I've had cases where a pin lock signified nothing, and other times when it was the end or the beginning of the end. In any of these cases, you have to go to the club booth to find out. Your card is useless to download any free player redeem points until it's fixed, if they're going to fix it. Now, when I go, though, if I can get it going at least temporarily, now I'm immediately cashing out all the points I can, if I can. Sometimes casinos accurately redeem everything when they restrict you. Sometimes they don't. If I'm possibly on the short timer list, I want to get as much of my free play out of the account in case it goes away soon. And if nothing has happened in 3 months or so, I can let the free play build back up again. All right, next question. I'm very curious about rated versus unrated, and there's a lot of conflicting information out there. The baseline suggestion is always play unrated, but several guests on Gambling with an Edge have said they play rated. And you had a surveillance guy saying play unrated raises a red flag. Is there a definitive answer for this? Richard.
Well, I don't remember the surveillance guy saying that raised a red flag. I certainly know there are card counters who say that. But we have had a lot of surveillance guys, and maybe one of them said it. But the point is, it doesn't matter if it raises a red flag. You still shouldn't do it, because if you get backed off and you have given them your name, well, now your name is toast forever. And the only way to get around that is to go have a legal name change. So if you want my opinion, it is to not use a player's card. There is real value in having a clean name.
The South Point is more than 10,000 games returning at least 99%. This is more such games than anyone else has. From 3 a.m. to 3 a.m. Monday through Thursday in June, $600,000 spin to win promotion. Play 2,500 points at video poker, or 750 points at slots, or a combination, and you spin the virtual wheel at your machine. You may win between 2,500 and 100,000 slot points, worth $7.50 to $300 respectively, or free play between $5 and $100. You may spin up to four times per promotion day. So far, each spin is it's approximately equivalent to triple points for the first $10,000 coin in for 4 days a week. It does end at 3 a.m. So if you're playing on a game where you can get the play in say 3 hours, it is possible that you start at midnight and play 3 hours for your first set, and then another 3 hours after that. If you're playing quarters, well, single line, well, $10,000 coin in is going to take you all day, and you're not going to be able to do that back to back. But if you're playing, say, $2 single line, you can get 10,000 points in a little over an hour. And so it's very feasible to do it twice.
If you're serious about card counting, the Blackjack Apprenticeship membership is a great way to learn, train, network, and get the resources you need to succeed. We've had quite a few guests on Gambling with an Edge who exclusively trained and got their start through Blackjack Apprenticeship. Check out the website at blackjackapprenticeship.com. They have member forums, training software, and guides to help you learn. So that's blackjackapprenticeship.com, and you will find a link in the show notes.
VideoPoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Good Times Pay. This is a triple play game, 6 to 10 coins per line, random multipliers, but it's always a 100% bonus. At South Point, the best game is quarter triple play NSU, which is $7.50 per play. A lot of players find that more fun to play than either single line NSU or single line dollars or single line $2. Let's go back to the questions. I'm headed back to Vegas next week. Where do I need to go for Asian food?
Well, there are a lot of really great Asian restaurants in Vegas. So some of my favorites. Now, I prefer kind of hole-in-the-wall places. So, for example, for Thai food, there are two great places on Sunset, East Sunset. One is called Table Thai, and another is called Table Thai Kitchen. Those are both on Sunset, east of the Strip. If you want something a little fancier, that the restaurant that people talk about, it's called Lotus of Siam. And for me, Lotus of Siam is kind of resting on their laurels. Their food is very good, but the, you know, the prices have gone up and the portions have gone down. And So that's great for Thai food. Another one of my favorite places is called Zhang Noodle. And it's a little hole-in-the-wall place on West Flamingo and Decatur. If you want something fancy, there are several Nobus in town. There's Mr. Chow's at Caesar's Palace. But I would really recommend that you get off the strip. If you like dim sum, Ping Pang Pong in the Gold Coast is good. So anyway, those are a few. But, you know, you also go to Chinatown, which is just west of the strip on Spring Mountain. And there's just tons of great places there.
Yes. And some players, when they're talking about eating in Vegas, are talking about where they can get comped. And so many of the casinos have Asian restaurants. And so I like Zenshin in South Point. Now, I like Mr. Chow's in Caesar's Palace. But if you want to pay real cash money, well, then Richard's suggestions make more sense. Next question. I know that casinos give more points to slot players and video poker players, but do they reward some video poker games more than others? For example, does triple double bonus get more points than bonus poker for the same amount of play because of a much higher variance? So yes, some casinos reward some video poker games better than others, but not in the way you suggest. You're suggesting that it has to do with volatility, which it doesn't. Whether a game has high or low variance affects the players more than the casinos. Casinos get action on the machines in most cases, so the volatility doesn't matter. What does matter is theoretical. A game with a 96% return is worth more to a casino than one with a 99% turn. So sometimes a more profitable game is rewarded more by the casino. One example is the El Dorado casinos, formerly known as Caesars, formerly known as Harrah's. Most video poker players require $10 coin in to earn one reward credit. However, 9-6 jacks or better in most of their casinos often requires $25 or $50 for that same reward credit. Some local casinos in Las Vegas offer what is named optimal play machines, which are a return of more than 100% with perfect play. These machines often require 3 or 4 times as much coin in to earn points as regular video poker does. And if you play these optimal play games anyway, the value of your mailers goes way down, sometimes to zero. Another thing to keep in mind is in most casinos, all games on one physical box get the same slot club points. So if they have one casino, the Four Queens has a $10.7 double bonus, which is over 100%, but they also have 8.5 double-double bonus, which is way, way under 100% on the same box. And these get half the slot club points as the regular machines do. So even though that double-double bonus game is way tighter, if you play it on those machines, you will get less slot club points. Next question. I've been practicing video poker on videopoker.com and playing double-double bonus with my free play. If I wanted to get the most out of free play to add to my bankrolls, are high variance game better? How would you play $150 a day free play if I were to like a midnight straddle in 2 days so I have $300 in free play and only play one game? Like, should I play double-double or triple-double? I just want to learn one strategy. Would double-double or triple-double be better? You said double-double bonus has a variance or volatility of 93. not true. That's triple-double. Could you compare the double-double and triple-double for me at those levels? The games are 7-5, which is terrible. But I can kill time between negative shoes with the free play. All right. Well, you're right that these are terrible games. But you're wrong about the variance. 7-5 double-double bonus is worth 95.7% with a variance of 42. 7-5 triple-double bonus is worth 94.9% with a variance of 101. Now, it's unlikely those are the best two games in the casino, but I don't even know what casino you're talking about. If I were forced to choose between those two games, I'd pick double-double bonus because it both has a higher return and a lower variance, and those are both pluses. If you don't file as a professional gambler, double-double bonus has fewer and smaller W2Gs than triple-double bonus.
I don't understand why he doesn't just pick a better game like Jacks are Better or Bonus Poker or something.
Well, I don't know what they have. And if he's only going to learn one strategy, he likely doesn't know the key to evaluating the other games. But probably,
if you're only going to learn one strategy, though, I would go find out what the best game in the place is and learn that. Although, I mean, wouldn't you say that learning the Jacks are Better strategy is sort of the most kind of generic thing to learn if you're only going to learn one strategy?
Yeah, if you're going to play that game. Jacks are Better and Bonus Poker have for approximately equivalent strategies. And the strategy for double bonus and double-double bonus are similar, not exact. So it depends on what you're going to play. Now, this guy is playing a pretty small amount, you know, $150 a day, which is... And he only wants to learn one strategy. So I don't know. Is he ever going to play video poker somewhere else where other games are valuable? I don't know. On videopoker.com, I doubt, you know, they have pay schedules you can go against, but I doubt if they go down to 7-5. The strategy for 7-5 double-double is significantly different than the strategy for 9-6 double-double. And so if he's practicing on videopoker.com with the wrong pay schedule, that's going to do not so much good. Win Poker is still sold. And you can put in the exact pay schedule and you can practice till you get good. But I'm not sure this guy wants to get good. He wants to get a benefit for the least amount of effort. All right, next question. I came across two Harrah's Cherokee casinos in North Carolina. One is in a small town, Murphy, North Carolina, which I don't believe to be a reservation. And the much larger one is in the town of Cherokee, which is on a reservation for sure. Big signs informing you. Do these casinos classify as Indian casinos with the Harrah's name attached? And should a player be worried about playing there or not? Would love to return someday. Very nice establishment, the both of them. Well, they're definitely Indian casinos. We mentioned earlier, Bob Nersessian indicates be very, very wary at Indian casinos. Now, I've played at Harrah's Cherokee. It is a, I am not doing anything pushing the envelope. And so I am relatively not concerned with getting into trouble. The people who get into trouble are, pushing the envelope. And these are Indian casinos. Richard, do you have any thoughts?
No, I really don't know anything about them at all. So But as Bob says, if you're just a recreational player or you're just, you know, taking advantage of the mailers you get playing video poker or slots or things, you really don't have anything to worry about in an Indian casino.
What I just said, the people who get into trouble there are people taking shots or pushing the envelope. Do you concur with that?
Well, no, I don't consider counting cards, you know, pushing the envelope.
Nor do I.
So, but certainly, you know, card counters sometimes experience trouble in Indian casinos. Now, I have no idea if there's any problem at those particular ones. But as I say, I don't consider counting cards to be pushing the envelope.
But maybe hole carding or maybe...
Yeah, or maybe slot scavenging stuff. You know, some casinos really don't like that.
All right. Very good. We have run out of questions. So we need you, the listener, to send us some more. And send it to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or send it to Richard and me individually. And we will, in another month or three, have another one of these. At the end of our show, we have a recommended section. Richard, do you have something to recommend to our listeners today?
I do. I should say that, you know, I also recommended all those good restaurants. But in addition to that, my recommended this week is a podcast called Margins of Error. And there was a recent episode called Bursting the Bath Time Bubble. And basically, it's a history of cleanliness. And the reason it struck me was because, you know, here in Nevada, we are going through this drought and Lake Mead is down like to all-time lows and we're running out of water. And whenever I'm taking a shower, I'm always thinking, you know, we waste an awful lot of clean water by showering every day. And do we really get that dirty? You know, I mean, what did I do that made me so dirty that I need to shower every day? And anyway, so this particular podcast kind of came along at the right time with this sort of history of how often people shower and I just, or bathe. And I just found the whole thing very interesting. So, but, you know, I also think there's got to be a better way. Right? There should be some way that we can clean ourselves, I don't know, without using all sorts of clean drinking water. But anyway, so that's my recommended. The podcast is called Margins of Error. You might find other episodes there that you like. And so that's it for me.
Well, my recommended is a... is another lawyer series, William Bernhardt. He wrote something like 20 of Ben Kincaid novels where it had the same law firm based in San Diego and kind of a continuing thread. And so I've read a whole lot of those and I really liked them. In 2019, he started a new series. The lawyer is named Daniel Pike and always takes the underdog. And they're different. They're interesting stories. After the Last Chance Lawyers, the next two, they have a liberal bent to them. The bad guys are always arch conservatives. The good guys want platforms that socially progressive people would like. So if you are a, depending on your politics, that may have your effect as to whether or not you liked it. On the Ben Kincaid ones, politics didn't enter into it. But on the Daniel Pike ones, it does. But outside of the politics, it's an interesting story and good lawyers. So that's William Bernhardt. All right. Thank you very much, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.